The Geekinator Podcast, episode number 24. QuickSurf Internet Media presents The Geekinator, talking about all things tech and geek. And diddle-little say, hey everyone, how's it going? You are listening to The Geekinator here on Techno Geek Nerd. This is episode number 24, and I've got a whole load of stuff to share with you, pretty cool things, items, articles, news, that sort of thing. Lots has been going on. I guess that's the proper way of saying it. Lots has been going on since the last episode, and I'm here to share it with you. There's been lots of rumors flying around the internet about something new coming out of Apple during the month of October. And there's been lots of rumors swirling around, a lot of it around what's called the Apple Brick. You know, insert your fantasy here, the Apple Brick. I wrote an article about it. I'm hoping it's some mid-range, you know, Mac something, Mac Pro Mini or something like that, because there's a serious hole in Apple's hardware line, in my opinion. As always, you can find that on my website, but that's just my personal opinion. A lot of other people out there have been coming up with fantastical things, and there's clearly movement, as we've previously reported, there's movement afoot in various inventory systems. Computer World has an interesting article at the Apple Link, or Apple Inc., I should say, blog by Seth Weintraub, and he's pointing out that the Apple Brick isn't an actual product. It may be the result of a product, or a product may result from it, but the Apple Brick is a manufacturing process. Huh? That's exactly what I said when I read that headline. Well, it turns out that what he's saying the actual case of MacBook Pros and stuff are basically going to be, you know, laser cut or water jet cut or something out of a solid brick of aluminum. Now, I doubt that that's the case because A, it's extremely slow, and B, it's extremely time consuming. Well, I just said that, slow. I'm sorry. B, it's also very expensive, and it would be very difficult for Apple to fit a basically custom CNC machined aluminum case for a MacBook Pro and still get the thing at some point the case has to be utilitarian enough and inexpensive enough that it costs less than what's being put into it. And aluminum ain't that cheap to begin with. And if you're going to be manufacturing, you know, basically cutting out a case from a solid block of aluminum, that's a lot of waste. Even if you go into recycling it, you're effectively paying for it twice. But I don't think it's going to be the case. But he's got a really interesting story, or article, not really a story, but an article explaining it and talking about it and discussing it. And personally, I don't think that's the case at all, because it's just way too slow and it's going to be very expensive to do. So that's the brick. I don't think it's actually going to be that, but only time will tell. At this point, it's all speculation. TechCrunch has an article about Google Gears, and I've never really paid that much attention to Google Gears, but apparently, according to TechCrunch, there's been lots of misconception that Google's next-gen – boy, I'm tongue-tied tonight – it's the dyslexia and the stuttering that's getting to me tonight. Out of all of my inhibitions. Ugh, sorry. Rough night. And to think I'm doing a podcast with all these verbal problems. All right. Anyway, I digress. Back to TechCrunch here and Google Gears. The article is stating that there's a common misconception that Google's next-gen web platform called Gears only enables offline capabilities for web applications. And the author of the article, Mark Hendrickson, stipulates or offers forth, I should say, that Google's ambitions are actually far greater than that. And the extensions that you get in the browser, the capabilities are multifarious. And, you know, and then he gives a couple of examples. MySpace's implementation of Gears, which has little to do with offline functionality, is a perfect example. And, you know, he basically goes in, talks about it. Gears can be used by developers to improve web applications, and he lists a bunch of ways, i.e. client-side database storage. Sounds an awful lot like offline storage to me, but we'll leave that one on the table for now. Client-side web page serving. Now, that's an interesting thing. Again, offline storage. Desktop shortcuts. Multiple file uploads, geolocation, background processes, you know, stuff that may be coming up in upcoming releases, you know, progress bars, file resumption, on-screen notifications. I mean, this is a pretty extensive article. And then they've got a video linked up, Nick Kubrilov's, oh, I'm sorry. They've got a, boy, I'm having a really tough time tonight, so please bear with me. They've got a YouTube video linked up in this particular article, and it's a presentation by Google's Chris Prince given at this past May's Google I/O Developer Conference, and it's a visual and oral walkthrough of Gears. I'm not going to play it here because I haven't watched the video and I don't know how long it is. If it's only a couple of minutes. Actually, you know what? Let me pause this here. And this will actually also give me a chance to collect my thoughts. And then I'll do a quick one through on this video and find out how long it is. If it's not that long, then I'll go ahead and play it here. Hang on, I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. The video that they link is 48 minutes long. So if you've got some time and you're interested in Google Gears, Chris Prince gives a walkthrough of it in this video linked up on YouTube. It's in the TechCrunch article, blog post. Excuse me. So if you want to check it out, feel free to do so. You can get it on my website. Just go to quicksurf.com. I've got a link to the Crunch Tech, to the TechCrunch article, and feel free to check it out. So, also on TechCrunch, there's a some news about Real DVD. We reported previously that Real DVD is suing Hollywood, and Hollywood is suing Real DVD, and there's been some developments. Real Networks versus Hollywood case will be heard in Silicon Valley court. So feel free to check. This is actually a pretty lengthy article here. And they also have the scanned in court documents and that sort of thing. So check it out if you want to know what's going on with Real DVD from Real Networks and how that everything is going with being sued by Hollywood and suing Hollywood. From VNUnet.com, London is getting a Microsoft Research Office. I probably shouldn't be recording a podcast tonight because my dyslexia and stuttering is really getting in the way, but please bear with me here. The City of London is getting a new Microsoft Research Office. It's one of three selected by Microsoft to house the new research offices, which will focus on improving Microsoft's search technology. So Microsoft is doing some behind-the-scenes search R&D. One of their offices is going to be located in London, England, the UK. From TechDirt, there's a nice article here. 5 years into suing fans, RIAA's sue everyone strategy has failed miserably. The EFF has a long and comprehensive look into the RIAA's 5 year and running legal campaign against file sharing. It's a great overview that not only brings you up to speed if you haven't been following the whole thing, but also puts the entire campaign into perspective. And basically the summary of it is almost every RIAA move has made it's made in its legal campaign has backfired, blown up straight in his face. Categorically, it has been a colossal failure. Everyone except them has observed this and verbalized it, but they still soldier on. It's almost like watching a horribly bad horror movie, and you just, it's so bad it's good, and you just can't let it go. if that's an analogy to use. From CNetNews.com and their green tech blog, solar power for toxic waste sites. Gosh, what a great idea. Why hasn't anyone thought about this before? Companies seeking to establish solar power farms around protected wildlife areas can face a long Byzantine government permitting process. In fact, this is one of the major reasons why there are not more solar generating facilities out in the middle of Timbuktu where nobody lives anyway. Why not set up utility-scale renewable energy in polluted zones instead? It makes perfect sense. Well, believe it or not, that's what the Environmental Protection Agency is proposing. It has a map of, its map for Google Earth show the potential for solar, wind, and biomass plants across 480,000 sites marred by toxic industrial waste and mining. And believe you me, when you look at that map, there are a load of them. The agency says 850,000 acres it has cleaned up among 15 million contaminated acres total are exceptional destinations for clean power companies, in part due to the low cost and existing infrastructure there. How about that? Let's put solar power in the polluted. How's that for a kick in the head? How ironic. Let's put renewable and solar power in the crap hole of a site. Excuse my French. Crap hole of a site that nobody will buy and nobody wants to live near because it causes weird looking babies. Let's put the renewable energy sources there instead of screwing up even more land that's pristine. But, you know, I mean, it makes sense. Why nobody has thought about this before, I don't know. But I totally support and applaud the effort. And maybe, just maybe, the companies that, you know, do decide to do, the, you know, start putting renewable energy in these polluted areas, maybe they can take the money that, or half the money that they were going to spend otherwise and use it to help clean it up. That would be so cool. Instead of screwing up even more earth by putting more, you know, by building renewable energy sources in areas that don't currently, you know, are pristine, virgin areas, let's take the ones that are screwed up, clean them up a little bit, throw some renewable energy sources in there, and whoop-bam, there you go. And looking at this map, the U.S. has a lot of sites. We could probably power the entire U.S. off of something like that. All solar power. Wouldn't that be cool? All right. from Environmental Graffiti at environmentalgraffiti.com, I found this really cool article. It's called Five Incredible Underwater Habitats. The pictures are astounding. If you're a fish lover or an aquatic life lover or any of those, you got to check this out. It's basically about underwater habitats, restaurants, that sort of thing. The first one they talk about is the Hydropolis Hotel in Dubai. And then the Hilton Maldives Undersea Restaurant in Rangelai Island. Picture from that one looks pretty neat. The Poseidon Undersea Resort in Fiji. Apparently it's still being built, but they've got a video embedded of that. The Jules Undersea Lodge in Florida. Believe it or not, this one has existed for quite some time. And basically, you scuba dive down to it, and it's like a little airlock underneath the surface of the ground, and it holds six people. And you live underwater in this airlock, and it's got furniture, you know, and all the stuff, but big windows everywhere so you can see everything going on. And then when you're done with your stay and you're ready to go back, you don your wetsuit and you swim back up to the surface. You know, obviously you'll have to do some decompression and stuff like that, but still. It was originally an underwater research facility, but they've converted it to an underwater lodge, or an undersea lodge, I guess you could say. Pretty neat stuff. Check it out. Definitely a vacation spot if you're a huge scuba diver. The fifth one they talk about is the Red Sea Star restaurant in Israel. Pretty cool stuff. It's all underwater. Again, you can see out into the ocean, that sort of thing. Pretty neat. So anyway, something to definitely check out. So how many of you out there have purchased Iron Man on Blu-ray? I expect to see lots of hands. Email me, tell me all about it. There's a story on Gizmodo where Jon Favreau, the director of Iron Man, he was on the Howard Stern show, and he said as of Thursday that the Iron Man Blu-ray has outsold every other Blu-ray release to date. Now, of course, there aren't any official numbers to back that up yet, but I expect here in the next week or so to see some official numbers. Seeing how popular Iron Man was as a movie, it'll be interesting to see how many they've sold. So, pretty cool stuff. Check this story out if you want to. Kind of some sad news on TechCrunch. Steve Jobs has died of a heart attack. I'm kidding. There's been a story circulating around that was actually perpetrated on iReport. It's a CNN citizen journalism site. Oh, excuse me. And someone anonymously posted that Steve Jobs had a heart attack. Of course, it turned out to be false. As of Saturday night, there's been no new developments. You know, Apple has vehemently denied that he has had a heart attack. And so essentially what has happened is Apple's stock took a 10-point hit because of this false report that he had had a heart attack. And the FCC is actually investigating it. Maybe somebody was attempting to short sell Apple stock, knowing that if they reported something like that, the stock would go down, you know, or, you know, it could be any number of reasons why someone would do something ridiculous and stupid like that. But still, nonetheless, it kind of underscores the point. If something were to happen to Steve Jobs, what would happen to Apple stock? I mean, this was a false report, and until it was debunked, Apple stock tanked. Totally tanked. So pretty interesting story that they've got up on TechCrunch, so check it out. from Make Magazine. They're on their website, or actually the blog, blog.makezine.com. There's an item posted called 100 Skills Everyone Should Know. And basically, it's about a story Popular Mechanics has run about 100 skills that everyone should know. And the article says men, but as you know, everyone goes through the list, more women know how to do more of the skills than men do. So I'm going to suggest that they call it 100 skills everyone should know. So anyway, check it out. Pretty cool stuff. And like I said, it's 100 things everyone should know. From Gizmodo, we talked about iTunes 8.0.1 on the last show. Well, I forgot to mention the Apple TV has also received an update. Apple TV 2.2, you can now include Genius Playlist, HDTV show purchasing, couple of security holes, that sort of thing. Pretty cool stuff. If you're an Apple TV owner, please go check it out. I'm hoping they release a new Apple TV. That would just be the bee's knees if they released one that had a Blu-ray player in it. Now we're talking. Okay, so that pretty much does it for this episode of the Geekinator here at Techno Geeky Nerd. As always, everything we've talked about is linked up in the show notes. Just visit us on the web, quicksurf.com. And you should see the episodes listed there on the main page. You can also just go for the category for the Geekinator and get all of them listed sequentially. Avenues of contact, you can shoot me an email, geekinator@quicksurf.com. You can visit us online and leave a comment. And we also have a voicemail hotline, 602-466-3134. That's 602-466-3134. And if you guys have any URLs, articles, really cool stuff that you want to share with everyone else, send me an email with it, and I'll throw it up on the next show. And with that, I'll talk with all you on the next show. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you then. Bye.